Man. The video game industry is kind of a mess right now for a lot of reasons, but we're going to focus on just three today. So first, there have been a lot of layoffs, actually thousands of layoffs from some of the biggest game studios out there, and that's just this year. Then there's a situation with some free software that, well, kind of free software, we'll talk about it. But this was called Yuzu, and it allowed people to play Nintendo Switch games on their computer or whatever device they wanted to. And Nintendo ended up suing them, which sounds normal, I mean, company stuff, right? But this particular case has some implications that could set some pretty bad precedents for video games in general. But the thing that inspired this conversation most directly is this. People have been getting a little bit annoyed recently about a particular video game haircut that seems to be showing up on almost every single black video game character recently. And then in response to that, people have been getting extremely angry about the fact that there's even a conversation about black hair in video games at all. I know, video games, par for course, maybe we shouldn't be surprised. But the definitive piece just dropped on IGN about this entire conversation. So I got the person who wrote it. Now, this is Trone Dowd, and he is one of the experts on black hair and video games, because as ridiculous as that sounds, that has become something of a microbeat in games journalism. And it's something I've covered too, but not nearly as much as Trone has. So anyway, let's get into it. Man, Trone, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. I think I'm riding the wave, the media wave, the same way everyone else is. But mostly, I can't complain.
We are all riding the wave. I mean, really, legit, just try not to sink. I don't know what we're doing anymore. But yeah, it's something like that. It is something like that. But yo, so for those who are unfamiliar with you, I, of course, know you. How do you introduce yourself now? Tell people who you are.
Journalist, I guess I just say that. I started out just doing some local reporting in New York City, covered the borough of Queens, Southeast Queens in particular. Went to grad school, and then out of that, went over to Vice. I was there for like three and a half years total. 2019 was my internship, and then 2020 through 2023, I was there. After that, I was over at The Messenger. Before that, went kaputs. but through that, I covered like a variety of different things. I didn't cover gaming initially. That wasn't until The Messenger. That was like such a cool opportunity to come along, because gaming is what got me into journalism in the first place. I just took this massive detour and did like hard news for a while.
Like real hard news. You're not playing when you say that. So Trone and I, man, I feel like, well, so you came on in 2019, and so obviously if you're, I'm just going to say it, if you are at any news organization and it's 2020 and you're black,
yeah,
there's a pretty good chance you know what beat you are on, officially or unofficially.
Right.
Yeah, you could be working the front desk and all of a sudden it's AO. You go out and ask some people in the community what's going on, bro.
Right.
It's full recruit. It's just how it was.
Yeah. It was a lot of, like, you know, sort of needing a perspective. And, you know, mm-hmm. I was one of the few black writers on the Vice News team. I think actually the only one on the digital side. And, it was interesting. I obviously covered the Ahmaud Arbery case. I covered the George Floyd stuff very, very closely. 2020 was a hell of a year, and then all of the fallout that came after that was pretty much me. And that was just happenstance. I used to cover police a lot for the Tribune, and I was a local reporter, and then I was over in Vice, and it was like, well, all right, I guess we'll take this experience and use it. It's like I made it pretty clear to my editors later on, like, again, 2020 on was like a lot. I think a lot of black folk in media, we sort of had this reckoning of like, do I want to keep doing this? Is this something that I like? Do I want to keep covering this beat if you want it to stay in news? So I was kind of having that moment myself. And my editors were wonderful. Shout out to Michael. Michael Learmonth, like, totally let me have like this little side project of like, hey, when you're ready to write about something for Waypoint, which was the gaming vertical for Vice, like, free to pitch him. And I remember I did the story about black hair back then, which, you know, relates to what we'll cover later on.
Let's. let's talk about this. What is, so this is an article that you, and you're freelancing now, which is amazing.
I am.
Yeah,
I
man. Am. So you're out all over the place. What is the Killmonger cut? I've seen this called different things all over the place. So this is what people are calling it. What is it?
Yeah, so the Killmonger cut is, it's sort of, it's become like the new afro, the new low top fade, the new cornrows of gaming. And if you're not familiar, like, those are sort of the staple haircuts for video game characters, video game creation suites. If you want to make a character and that character happens to be black, you probably had one of like three options. And, you know, in recent years, post Black Panther, this is one of the new options. And I think we reached sort of a breaking point earlier this year after the reveal of a certain legacy character had, like, they added this haircut retroactively to him. And people were not happy. So we decided to do a piece on it of, like, where did it come from, what the industry thinks of it, why it's so popular. It's just sort of a deep dive into what the Killmonger cut is and why people are just kind of, black folk in particular, like myself, kind of sick of seeing it.
Yeah. So, man, there's a lot in here. I know you've been reporting on. We need to pause for a moment to appreciate that it's a wild thing to say the sentence that I'm about to say. You've been reporting on black hair in video games for a while, which is a strange. That's a weird beat. And I know it's not your full beat, but that's it's a weird thing to say. Yeah, this is a topic that I've covered before, because I have too. And it's. Take me back a little bit. Why is it that we're even having the conversation about black hair in video games?
Right. It's I think that kind of nails it. Like, why in general? I mean, the answer is pretty clear. It's just like, this is an industry that doesn't have a lot of black folk in it to begin with. It's not to say that there aren't black folk who aren't ready, willing to be, you know, artists and lead designers and so on. It's just a matter of the industry has been mostly white. Those white gatekeepers are less likely to bring on black folk to be artists, to have a voice that really matters and says, like, hey, we should really invest in a diversity of styles and looks for black characters or black players if it's a game where, you know, you're creating your character. And I think that's a big part of it. And I think the reason why we're having this particular conversation today is, you know, in this new day and age where, you know, one of the biggest films of the last decade was basically all black, with a black director, with black artists and black fashion, and it centered black identity. It feels like a lot of white folk in the industry looked at that movie and was like, gotcha, this is the model. And this is all the work we have to do. And I think that's why we're here today, is like, you got to look beyond that movie. It was an amazing movie, don't get me wrong. I loved Black Panther, saw it at midnight. People were dressed up all around me, had a great time. But there are other black films, there are other black pieces of art for you to take inspiration from.
See, I feel like we're veering off somewhere. I'm gonna say this because it's not Black History Month, so I feel like we're in the safe zone. I actually didn't like Black Panther.
Whoa!
It wasn't for me. I'm not a superhero movie person, and that's what it came down to. That's also, Killmonger did nothing wrong. Those are my problems.
You're not alone in that. I think a majority. I remember being in the theater that day and just like turning to all of my friends, like, he's got a tremendous point that we really. Like, I don't know, fam.
Yeah, like, I don't understand here. Aren't we? Like, I was running with dude, and then all of a sudden, yeah. But mostly it's superhero movies for me. It was like cool. It was cool. Fun ride.
Yeah.
It ended, and I was on to the next thing. But that's all to say that as you lay out in your article here, clearly Black Panther was hugely, hugely influential, which I hesitate to say double-edged sword, but it looks like it was a bit of a double-edged sword in this sense, because it really looks like every game developer, every AAA game developer went out, watched this movie, and then said, yeah, all right, let's do this. So let's get into this article here. So you open up with a topic that that actually has come up on this stream before, Tekken. So Eddie Gordo, so as you say here, I'm reading from your article here, the return of Eddie Gordo, the Capoeira specialist who's been a fan favorite in the long-running Tekken series since his franchise debut 25 years ago, should have been a slam dunk for Bandai Namco. So is this right? He wasn't in the original lineup and they were going to drop him as DLC. Is that right?
Right. And, yeah, you know, that was sort of a make good because I think it was like last August when like the full roster would have come out. People were like, where's Eddie? Like, what's up with Eddie not being here? Normal gamers.
Normal gamer stuff.
Yeah. So they were making good on it. You know, the first bit of DLC for this game, which by the way is like doing really well, got amazing reviews. It looks stunning. Seems to play very well. And yeah, it was like, all right, this is like the perfect follow-up to a great launch. Mm-hmm. And we see Eddie and he has this brand new, well, not really brand new. He has the Killmonger cut. And immediately a lot of black folk who I follow on Twitter were like, we got to talk about this.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, rightfully so. There's no reason. Like his look, as one of my sources says, like right up top, like he already had a very iconic look, and he kind of looks generic as a result of the change because there's so many other black characters. Like even this past month, the Prince of Persia game that came out, which also excellent game, the lead character, the Killmonger.
Yeah,
I think there is a photo of
it. It's down. I mean, here we got Miles in Spider-Man 2. Here we go.
Amazing game, by the way. Again, like everyone should play it. Metroidvania stuff, really cool. But like character, you know, great that we have a black protagonist, but like guys, let's be a little bit more inventive here, because yeah, it's a little tired. You get exhausted of like, okay, you've added a fourth to the black haircuts, like let's keep going.
And I think so this is a really, this is a question that I want to pick up that Sophie's asked is, what of this do you think, is this we don't care about representation? By the way, that's a word that I have some non-insignificant amount of beef with. I think, I feel like I just hear it too much. It's a little bit too much of a buzzword for me. But I understand where it comes from. Love to get into that though. But, I want to hold on to this for a second, actually. Let's just talk logistics, because you get into this in your article. Why is it that there are so many games, and these are AAA video games? Again, this isn't like somebody doodling on their pad and everybody just happened to have the same thing at the same time. How is it that games that take multiple years to make all come out with characters with this hairstyle?
Yeah. It's sort of a funny phenomenon, and it's like, it's the one bit where it's like, it's not entirely the developer's fault in most of the times. Like I'm sure the fact that they have a black lead in some of these games or black characters is like, hey, awesome. Like you guys are listening, you know that your player base, especially for a game like Tekken, like the fighting game community is so black. So it's like, you're on the right track, but I think it's a matter of, especially in the space that we're in, games take 5 years to develop. When you do the math on that, that's like around, you're still in the shadow of Black Panther. So I think it's secret. A lot of developers are working on their games with their black characters and going like, we're going to do the Killmonger cut. And it's going to be so cool when it comes out in 6 years, totally not played out. And when it drops, or rather when their trailer drops, and then you have a bunch of other trailers dropping where it's like, oh, every developer independently was like, we're going to do Killmonger. It's kind of this funny coincidence that it's all sort of rushing out now. You hope that we move past it at some point, but it's half of it is due to just, hey, games take a long time to make. And once they all come out and they all have the same things, it's very clear where the inspiration comes from.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is something, let me see if I can find this. There's a trope of, there's a few of these tropes, right? Specifically, I'm thinking of the Asian character hair streak thing. Do you know about this?
I guess I gotta see it.
You gotta see this, man. Okay, so any rebellious Asian female character always has a streak of color in her hair.
I see. Okay.
Like to a person. So this is something that people notice. I mean, this is actually a little bit before Black Panther. People would say this on Tumblr all over the place, but like, if you look at this, yeah, the fact that, so this is somebody tweeting this, says the fact that Asian girls in media can't be rebellious or different without a streak of, for example, purple color in their hair pisses me off to no end. And there are just collages.
Oh my God.
Incredible, man. I mean, Glee, Scott, the picture lineup here is incredible. You got character from Glee, Scott Pilgrim, Pacific Rim, 16, Titan AE, Big Hero 6, Transformers Prime, X-Men The Last Stand, X-Men Days of Future Past, Wolverine, Cloud Atlas. Like, what?
It's these design sensibilities that just like stick with these artists, and it's like, well, we have to. And it's like, what if you don't? What if you just break away and just create a character?
Which, you know, I mean, and I wonder how much of this goes to, I suppose all media is like this, but video games in particular, there's a really long tradition of just absolutely, I don't want to say stealing, I should say taking a page from something that exists out there that they're into and then pulling it into the video game. And that's kind of the cool thing to do. You know what I mean? We can talk about anything from, I mean, look at what, look at music, for example, in video games, like in the 16-bit going into the 32 and 64-bit era, you could tell when the composer was like going to clubs because they put the music was just hipper. People are always pulling from other sources, and it's not shocking that somebody would pull from anime. It's not shocking that somebody would pull from a film that they saw. But everybody's pulling from the same thing, which is wild. Yeah.
Right. You had mentioned earlier with games. I think games, more than any other medium, is so guilty of that. Like right from the start, like you look at Street Fighter, like half the, one of my sources, Del, shout out to him, Del Walker. He's incredible. He's a great person to talk to for this. You know, during our interview, he spoke about, you know, like look at Street Fighter, look at Mortal Kombat, look at, you know, Solid Snake based on Snake Plissken from Escape from New York. It's like all of these characters from the old days were based on movie characters. Games have always looked to movies. They've always looked to Hollywood for inspiration. Maybe that speaks to, like, you know, in recent years, sort of, we have the internet and everything's just sort of, you're a little bit more likely to be aware of everything, or at least, like, pop culture at large. And I think, like, that sort of principle, that sort of idea of games pulling from Hollywood, it just, there's a little bit more of a critical eye now compared to, you know, back in the late 80s, throughout the 90s, even the early 2000s.
Yeah, and I like, so I like what Quest is saying in chat right now, is that realistic hair is difficult, period. I mean, it's one of the things that's tough to animate straight up, because it's different from throwing a brick texture on a wall and saying, okay, yeah, that wall looks fine, cool, let's move on. What else do people spend a lot of time making sure looks good? Guns, say. Guns, I feel like we got that down.
Yeah.
We figured that out. We know how to model a gun. Guns look, all the guns look great. We can move on now. Physics, cool. Hair is tough.
Yeah.
Water used to be really tough, I think.
Yeah.
And now it's like the new thing is trying to make hair look different. Long hair, period. That's one of the old... If you look at a video game character, that's one of the tells, is often that, oh, this isn't actual real life. This is something this is real-time video game footage. You know, the difficulty of making hair, period, what is that like for a developer?
Yeah, and this is from, like, even my 6 months at The Messenger, talking to developers here and there. It's difficult. It doesn't matter the texture of hair. It doesn't matter what it is. It is difficult. It's as difficult as water. It's as difficult as trying to get, like, you know, texture on cloth correctly. Yeah. These are difficult things. So it's not to sort of throw that effort underneath the bus. It's a matter of using those resources and doing the research that you guys have clearly done into white hair textures and doing that same due diligence for black hair textures. And, you know, the common thing that was sort of thrown around for a long time was, black hair texture is just harder to render compared to white hair. You know, there's a lot more coils going on. It's harder to sort of realistically depict that in gaming. But that's not necessarily the case. There are ways around it. Like, all video games are miracles. And anytime you see something that's like breathtaking, someone put in the time, they put in the work, they put in the research to make sure that that thing looks the way that it should. Mm-hmm. And that can be applied to video games. You know, I'm sure we'll get into it, but like one of the folks I spoke to, like that's kind of her whole jam. And she did this great project all around, like, look, this is the tech of the time. Look at all the things you can do with the technology mm-hmm. that's available to you.
Yeah, should we take a look at it? Is this is Dark you're talking about?
AM Dark.
Yeah. So set this up for me. Who is AM Dark?
So AM Dark, she's a professor over at UC Santa Cruz. She does art. She does like the intersectionality of like culture and blackness. She does so much that even in our story, like there are things that I didn't even throw in there that she does that I hope will be like great for future stories. But she's someone who invented the open source Afro Hair Library, which was the story that I did for Vice News way back when. That would have been like my first piece about this topic. Mm-hmm. And basically it's this like free library available online where she recruits black artists to create black hairstyles that, hey, like if you're just looking for some inspiration for some really fantastical, some really like basic, some just some ideas for black hair other than the cornrows, the bald head, the fade, and the afro, take a look at these. And it's something that she's been working on for the last 2 years. But it got enough attention that, you know, she did a collaboration last November, with Dove. And Dove's been like super involved with sort of the acceptance of black hairstyles, just life. And their project was sort of centered on what I said a moment ago, just sort of, here's the tech that's available. Here's a like more than 200 page guide on how to render black hair without it being, you know, it's still going to be difficult because making video games is difficult, but right. It's very possible if you're willing to put in the time.
Just draw a guide, which that's kind of wild. Like, I'm looking at this, download the guide. I'm looking at the site here, which weirdly is on Dove.com.
Dove is that they
I'm sorry, them. That's just mad strange to me, but I get it where you can. Okay, yeah.
This guy made a huge splash when it came out, because like even with my interviews with some of the other folks I spoke to, you know, Black Girl Gamers and Melanin Gamers, like they were all like, oh, have you heard about this? I'm like, dude, I already spoke to them, and it's awesome. If you want to pull up the guy just to sort of show folks, like, it's a real comprehensive sort of like, here's what, you know, this kind of hairstyle looks like. Here are like sort of the subtle things, all of the different aspects that go into creating a proper looking, you know, whatever different types of hairstyles are featured. It's really, really cool stuff. And it's free. It's something that developers should definitely be looking at if they're not already doing the work on their end.
This is I'm looking at this right now. This curl style, I know it's not moving, which again, when it starts moving and flowing in the wind and environments in a video game, again, that's the tell. This looks pretty real, man.
Yeah.
This looks good. Oh my God, look at this. Okay, page 2, they got black hair textures and protective styles, twist out, natural locks, bantu, braided bob. Yo, what?
Yeah, AM has been doing the work to like, no, like there should be no excuses. And even if you're like somewhere where you don't have black folk on your team for some weird reason, like you can look to this guide, you can use this guide. And it is by black folk who can really talk about like, hey, you're not going to get into this weird uncanny valley. Like this is the guide to recreating our hair properly. And this of, you know, the Afro Hair Library, which she's doing with like artists rolling, you know, through over the years.
Mm-hmm. They have images you can download and project settings. Dude, it's
very comprehensive.
This is actually how to build this in Blender or something like that, like actual 3D modeling software. Is that the idea here?
It's awesome. It's when I finally got to like really take a look at it as I was doing the research, like I couldn't believe that this was just like available on the internet, that it launched last November. you know, granted, like I was working at different publications, so I wasn't necessarily covering this topic. But if I knew that this had come out, I would have been all over it because I thought it's the coolest thing that I've seen on this particular beat.
Yeah, the black hair Karen video games beat, which is a strange sentence, but still, it. Wow. Okay, this is truly pretty wild. Yeah, here is this. It basically takes you through. Here is a hairstyle. Here is some IRL pictures of it, and here is how you can replicate it in your 3D modeling program of choice.
Right. And I think some of, you know, AM might be a better person to speak to sort of what the work that went into this. Mm-hmm. I actually think she's a great person to talk to on live. But, you know, this comes from a place of just wanting it to be better, needing it to be better. Because, yeah, left alone to sort of like their own devices, like you just get the Killmonger cut a whole lot. So,
and I mean, I think that's maybe one of the main thrust of the article is just that I think a mistake if you go in and you look, let's just do it, man. Let's look at the comments. Let's look at some of these comments.
These are live reactions, everyone.
Yeah, man, live reaction. Right here. I mean, here's the person who says they're African-American. Shout out to you. This seems like a very silly thing to get hung up on. I don't care what a character's hairstyle is. What do we got? What do you hear? There's some other funny things in here that I just looked. Oh, the diversity to sell things movement has been morally disgusting. Players and game devs think that this type of representation is anything more than inverted whitewashing is just lying to themselves. Games were already diverse without it being the main message of the game, and IGN is part of it.
Yeah, this is why I was like, I think that you bring like black folk in front of gamers writ large, like it's automatically just like weird.
Yeah. And then let's read a couple more. Bear with me. I got a point here. All right. It's never enough. It's got to be exhausting trying to pander. Feel bad for the megacorps trying to please the unpleasable. Okay, there's one. Another one. It's literally a fad haircut. Remember the 90s? Remember the 2000s? Tons of copy and pasted styles for protagonists everywhere.
Right.
Okay. So, I think there's a willful or not misunderstanding happening here in some of these comments. I have my own theories, but what do you think? What's going on here? What's the disconnect? They're saying it's pandering. What's the disconnect?
I think one of the big disconnects is like folks not reading the article. I think that's the biggest one. But like I should say that like there is. It's not a matter of it's not happening at all. You know, there are amazing examples of black representation in games. Here's that word again. You know, I think of God of War. I think Baldur's Gate 3 did a great job. You know, Hogwarts Legacy is its own sort of can of worms. But if you did play it, that customization suite, like I remember running downstairs and telling my girlfriend who was also playing it at the time, just like, yo, this game actually got it right. Like, it's so cool. And then I go on Twitter and there's like threads of just black gamers who felt so good about like, wow, they thought about us. And I think that's what it is like if you're sort of in a bubble where you've had 50 different hairstyles and anytime you had to make your own character or like customize your protagonist and like that was there for you, you literally don't know what this issue is like for a whole other part of this hobby. And I think that it's totally fair for us to kind of just want to see ourselves in games. Like that's even me just saying that, like, that's not a revelation. We want to see ourselves, period. And that's all we're really asking for. I don't think it's pandering. I don't think it's anything like that. We just want to be seen in a way that's like, hey, we don't all have, you know, the same four haircuts.
Right.
The way that white folks have the same four haircuts. Like you guys have 50.
Yeah.
In no most games. Like, let us have this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. Yo, shout out white people. Y'all got all kind of different hairstyles.
Yeah,
lots of diversity. Yeah. Great.
But like when I make my black character, like I don't want to have like a total perm. Like I don't want to have like the typical, like it's just, I want to have a mullet. Like it's insane. that's just what we've had to deal with. When yeah. I tell you, I'm a big wrestling game fan. And like when I tell you for like 5 years in a row, the only black hairstyle in that game was Booker T's. And it was like, all right, like that's just what my character has to look like if we're making a black character. Thankfully they changed that in recent years, but like that's the kind of stuff we're talking about of like really the most prominent black wrestler is the only hairstyle that I can have if I create a character. That's wild.
Yeah,
it's wild.
and here's the thing, like there's people in the comments legitimately saying, man, I can't believe this, you're complaining, I've seen lots of diversity and of course you pick the games that aren't, you're cherry picking the games. It's bro, in the article it mentions examples of games that have done well. It's very just well, pointing yeah. out a trend. I mean, I'll pull this up right here. You're talking about Horizon Forbidden yeah. West. Like, this one what? Is a little killmongery.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. This one's a little killmongery. That's okay. Next one is not.
Yeah.
All right. Next one is something totally different. Next one is something totally different again. Next one is something totally different again. Like, look.
It's and like I should shout out also, like it's also not just about the hair. Like another reason why Forbidden West was so big with Black Twitter was, yo, they got the skin tones right. Like the light was reflecting off correctly. There were so many different shades. The lips look correct. It's a matter of you can tell when the work is done, because when you start up that game, if you're a black person, it stands out to you. Like, yo, that person looks black, like actually black. Like not they didn't just dial. You know, like a slider or whatever to make black characters. Like they did the work, and you can tell. And we just want that to sort of be a standard.
It'd yeah. be like, you know, the people who are like gun nuts or whatever, and there's something in a video game or something in a TV show, and there's something ever so slightly off about how the gun is depicted. It's all a bunch of amateurs made this. They don't know anything about guns. Like, okay, listen, that's fine. Yeah, I fully understand that you would expect if there's a bunch of guns depicted in this that they would at least ask somebody, hey, can you put that kind of bullet in this sort of gun? Mm. Perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I understand why you think that. Same thing when there's a person in the video game, I can fully understand when, hey, I spend a lot of time around people and that look like this and none of these really look quite right.
Right.
That's weird to me. This makes the game, and nobody's not playing these games. I don't know that anybody's boycotting Tekken because they don't like old boy's hair, because they could still fix it if they want. It's just a little annoying.
It's just a little annoying. And I think, you know, how else is the industry supposed to sort of get feedback if players aren't saying something? And I think that's sort of the crux of why this even became a topic. You know, if you look on Twitter, like you can see as early as like July of last year, like people were tweeting, like, I think I'm about sick of the Killmonger cut. And it just grew and it grew and grew. And it was like somewhere in January, which is sort of the breaking point of like, all right, enough. And, you know, we sort of did it in a very like, you know, boy, like if you don't do something about this. But I think that it was all in good jest. It was all in the sense of like, hey, as one of my sources says, like, we don't say something about it now, you know, 7 years from now, it's going to be like, all right, like y'all didn't say anything. It's like, well, we're saying something now, and games take a while to develop. And hopefully in 3 years, 4 years time. And I will say, like, the artists and developers that I actually spoke to, they are very much on the side of like, this will change. They are optimistic that like developers see that feedback and they will do something about it. And it's just a matter of just saying something now. And just letting developers know, like, hey, yeah, you got to go a little bit further than Black Panther, than 2018. It's an old movie now.
yeah. And I mean, I think the thing here to keep in mind, well, one other thing to keep in mind is that it is not the case that, again, looking at the comments would have you believe that, oh, man, and you could, okay, look, I'm going to back up. You know exactly what happens in the comment sections here is somebody looks at the headline and they see, wait a second, black video game character, black video gamers, black people, Let me just go right down to the comments and type in my thoughts. Have you read the article? No, but I have some things I'd like to say about this. Okay, yeah. Buddy. I think as Beatmaster said, is basically just a COD. They just turn it into a COD lobby. It's fine. We already know what it is. But the thing is, black gamers, fans of games, have been fixing this on their own for years. You know about this one, and you wrote about it in your article. I did an entire segment a long time ago, you know, back in 2021, about Sims players. Everybody remember The Sims? The customization in that game is 90% of the game. If you can't customize your character, what are you even doing? And there were a bunch of people who did not like the fact that the skin tones for black people looked super unnatural. They look fine for everybody else, but they look really unnatural. And the hairstyles look really silly. And in some cases, if you wanted more black hairstyles, you had to buy them. It was like a tax to be black in the video game. You had to pay extra money to get the extra black hairstyles when there's all these, you know, kind of generic white hairstyles, a pretty decent selection. There's like, I'm exaggerating here, but there's like two for black people. But oh, if you'd like some more, you got to download these. So what people were doing is just making their own stuff, releasing it as unofficial patches for free.
Yeah.
And people are just fixing it on their own. Yeah. And so it's not the case that everybody's sitting around. Yeah. X-Men Romero, like people are just making, they're fixing the games on their own. So people are doing things about it.
And that, it echoes something that black folk, like, we always do that. Like, if we aren't being serviced, we go ahead and do it ourselves. But at some point, I think the breaking point for Maxis and The Sims, Maxis is the developer behind it, was after 2020, just that crazy ass where a lot of black folk were just like, look, here are everything that we feel kind of like weird about.
Yeah.
Y'all got to do something about this. And, you know, EA, you know, thankfully listened. They were even gracious enough to sort of like, you know, provide comment for the story. But it just took, you know, one of those modders being like, look, we're kind of sick of this. And it's not to say that, you know, she's not continuing the work, but y'all got to do something on your end. Like, it makes no sense that, like, when, you know, a young black girl, a young black boy, like, boots up the game and, like, they can't see themselves in the game that's all about seeing yourself. Mm-hmm. That's insane. Like, that should be a baseline feature that's, like, right there from the beginning. And, you know, like, my EA source basically alluded to the fact that, you know, the next Sims game, they are well aware of that, and that should not be an issue going into the new one. Hopefully they keep that promise, but it seemed like they sort of learned their lesson after, you know, four different Sims games. Like, hey, you're pissing off, or not even pissing off, you're just disappointing a very big part of your fan base by, like, not allowing them to see themselves.
Yeah. And EA, say what you want about EA, but the people who run The Sims, who I've interviewed, and I will say, having done a few, not as many as you, I don't think at this point, but having done a few interviews with people in the game industry, the transparency I got from them was unusual. That was, I mean, even the willing to say, yeah, I think we kind of messed up over there.
Yeah,
I don't really hear that. Because usually game companies, they won't even talk to you if they think that's what you want to talk about. But if you come...
Closed off.
which we'll get to in a moment, with some other stuff. But I mean, I think the big thing here is people who are really into video games, I mean, super fans, have been modifying games since the beginning. Since the very beginning. I mean, I'm thinking of hacking stuff. I'm thinking of, you can still to this day, if you don't like the way Mario jumps in Mario Brothers 1, you can find a hack that changes the physics ever so slightly. You can find a hack that changes the colors, all sorts of stuff. And so the modification thing, it's always been around, and it's been for different reasons. For some things, you know, look, back in the day, Nintendo used to censor any religious iconography in video games. And so all the old Castlevania games in Japan, they had crosses and they had all, you know, church looking stuff all over the place. When it came to the States, they would delete all that stuff. Some people think, man, I can't believe Nintendo did this. It's terrible. I want you know, Konami allowed Nintendo to do this, and so I want the game to be played as it was originally intended. And they'll put the game, put the crosses back, the 8-bit crosses back in the video game.
Yeah.
Great. There's nothing wrong with that. That's great. Like, if that motivates you, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Games have gotten to the point now where you can, as you said, you can do almost anything. And there's a constant feedback loop, especially with the fact that, unlike a movie, you can release updates to video games. And so people can ask for stuff. People can either ask for stuff or people can make stuff. And I think what I see in this, rather than complaining, I see what I think Quest is talking about in the chat, is basically that it's just overplayed. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of played out. It's okay. Hey, I see what you're doing. I know your reference. Not everybody looks like this, and so having every single character have this, every single main character, or so many main characters or prominent characters in these AAA games come up with the same haircut. Okay, it's a little played out. Let's move on. Let's do something else.
I think the last point I definitely want to make on, it's looking at Hollywood for this inspiration and looking at Black Panther in particular, but not sort of like getting the actual lesson that you should have absorbed with Black Panther. Like, yes, this was a movie with an entirely Black cast, Black director, centering Black identity. Amazing movie, at least I thought. but you sort of like, the main takeaway of that movie should have just been, hey, like, they were Black set designers. They were Black costume designers. They're like incredible stories. I want to say it's The Atlantic. I linked to it in the story about like sort of the process of fusing, you know, sort of contemporary African styles with, you know, sort of like tribal styles, and like sort of mashing that together and sort of giving like opportunity to Black artists, Black visual artists, just Black folk in general. And games, like, in the attempt to sort of emulate the crossover appeal that movie had, like, they're not getting that lesson of like, you have to platform Black folk to get, you know, sort of that crossover appeal, that sort of that authentic feel that that Black Panther had. You can't just emulate what that movie did and call it a day. Do the work. Do the work that my Black Panther actually did.
Speaking of video games, the industry itself is in a weird situation. What do you think is going on, man? Bring me up to speed.
Sure. So I mentioned before, I worked at The Messenger from June to January when I got laid off. When I tell you, like, the main thing that I covered day to day was the amount of layoffs that we were seeing in the games industry. Mm-hmm. It was heartbreaking, because there was a lot of teams who, like, I really, really enjoyed their work, who just saw, like, just total cuts or complete closures. In the case of like studios like Volition, they were the guys behind Red Faction, and more recently, like, the Saints Row series. You know, these are teams that, you know, they have the chemistry, the sort of, like, I don't even know what the word would be, like, the chemistry to sort of make solid games, original games, fun games that players will see. And if they go away, like, those are our tours that we're losing. Not to say that those folks aren't going to go to other teams, but, you know, to sort of, like, see that unfold from June all the way through to December, and then in the start of this year, you know, there have been thousands and thousands and thousands of game layoffs.
I mean, we can even put a number to it. Mm-hmm. So this came out last week. So there's an article in Kotaku, and the headline says it all. 59 days into 2024, and 8,100-plus video game layoffs have been announced.
It's sickening.
That is a lot, man.
Yeah.
I mean, we were just talking about Black hairstyles in video games. Like, somebody has to make the video game.
Right. That's the other issue. And then, like, just to sort of, like, build on this, in 2023, it was, like, more than 11,000 total. And it's weird that we're 59 days in and we're almost matching that exact same figure. And the rest of the year, who knows what it's going to look like. You know, I'm sure we're going to outdo 2023, and that's no good. That's no good for this industry.
Oh, we've done it. Cause right here, let's see, in 2023, I'm reading this article right now. In 2023, we saw near weekly layoffs across the entire industry. When the dust settled, at least 6,000 jobs across publishers, developers, and other video game related companies had been terminated. We're in 8,000. Yeah, we're setting records.
Yeah, we're getting there. It's heartbreaking. Like I said, like if especially if you follow the industry as closely as me, and like I have favorite studios, I have favorite directors, I have games that I want to see, or like teams that I want to see sort of like create new things. So to like just to see like giant swaths of it sort of like tossed to the side, and a lot of these folks have to start from the beginning. It really sucks. also, like, just to sort of add on, like, I'm sort of at this intersection of, like, I'm also watching, like, all of my colleagues go through this over on the journalism side. It's been extremely harrowing to just sort of sit here and witness.
Yeah. Unity, which is a platform, which is software that a bunch of these games are built on. Twitch, also. Which, shout out to Twitch, I guess, losing people. Discord, also related. This article here, and it's a long article. Yeah. It's just got, here's a company, here's how many people they've lost. Here's a company, here's how many people they've lost. It's
a great resource. If you guys haven't seen the Kotaku story, they update it every time there's a new one, and which is weeks at this point, so... bookmark it just to sort of keep abreast of like what's been happening in this industry for like the last almost year now.
So this is the difficult question then. Again, up here, 8,000. Were we still in Q1?
I think we're about to end it.
Yeah.
Now
we're still, strictly speaking, in Q1, first quarter of 2024, 8,000 plus layoffs have been announced in video games. Why? What's going on?
It's a combination of things. Just to sort of like speed up, I guess there's two things here. The pandemic is a huge factor. During the pandemic, gaming saw a surge of interest. Obviously, we're all home. Everyone's at this, if you're a certain age, like you're familiar enough with video games to not treat it like, oh, what is that? I'm not going to touch it. It's like, yeah, if you're home, it's probably one of the many ways to entertain yourself. And I think the industry at large, or at least decision makers in the industry, hired in bulk. They made huge investments in work, in workers, in workforce. They made huge teams. And then, fast forward 2 years, which kind of gets back to games take a long time to make. Once they launch their game and they're not seeing the returns, these lavish returns that they were probably expecting, they're realizing like, we cannot support all of the additions, all of the investments that we put into just the manpower to create these games. Mm. What do we do with the extra workforce? We lay them off. I think that is a massive part of it. And the other half, which I already touched on, is just like, games are really big now. Games look tremendous. Don't get me wrong. Spider-Man 2, I might not have loved that game as much as everyone did, but like you can see every dollar spent on that game. I think the budget's around like 300 million, or like 320 million, something like that. Like it's using these resources to make these huge blockbuster games that take, like 5 years to make. And then to break even, you're asking for an insane level of success. What was it? After the game launched, it wasn't until like earlier this year that Insomniac broke even on Spider-Man 2. And mind you, this is Spider-Man. This is one of the biggest IPs in the world, backed by Sony. Like, this is one of the most successful games that you'll see probably in the decade. And if that can't break even within a few weeks... That's insane. Games are extremely big now. And I think the industry is reckoning with like, how do we scale back from this? Because this is not sustainable.
Well, there's also the fact that, in journalism, and there's layoffs happening all over the place. I mean, tech in general is getting it. Journalism is getting it. Video games is getting it. And look, I understand some people do not care about video games. I don't care about the video game industry. I only care about journalism. This is really important, man. The democracy is under attack. Yes, sure. Also, some people don't care about journalism. Fair. All you care about is, when's GTA 6 coming out? I understand you. Cool. I get it. I feel like there's some similar things at play here, because some of this, I mean, on the journalism side, yeah, we had Michael Learmonth on talking about, you know, advertising killing journalism, which I think there's a really strong argument for that. That's absolutely true. There's also just a lot of bad management has been happening.
Yeah.
Are you hearing anything about that on the game industry side?
Yeah, I think I'm forgetting what piece I would. I want to say it was a Polygon piece. There's a bit of newer companies just sort of not making huge investments in, like, let's say in 2020, like, hey, we're gonna double down and like introducing crypto and like the blockchain into games, because that's not right now. If we cross it over with games, like,
yeah,
we'll be really. And it's like, no, like I think we're losing the plot with what players actually want to do. I think one of the biggest conversations happening, like in 2024 at least, is sort of the big success of Helldivers, and even Powerworld before it. Like the idea of, like, I think bigger companies are realizing, like, you don't need to invest $300 million into a game that players are supposed to play for like the next 2 years and play just that game. Like, it's supposed to be their new destiny, and not sort of reading the room of like, yeah, you guys all can't be Fortnite. That is, you just need to read the room. And I think like that's a lot of the mismanagement that is sort of been part of the conversation this year. It's just sort of not realizing, like, yeah, you don't need to make these big investments. Like that is poor foresight. That is not reading the room and realizing what players actually want.
Well, talk to me about that. I mean, Samir's asking about that too, in the chat, about, so either fan-made games or independent games. I mean, this is something that I feel like a lot of game journalists have been trying to talk about independent games for the longest. It also cuts both ways, though, because, I mean, how many games are there on Steam?
Yeah.
How hard is it to get noticed, you know? But then you see something like Fall Guys. You see something like Among Us. You see, which, like, Among Us is barely a game, but people really like it. And Pal World, obviously more developed, but certainly not at the heights that maybe some people feel like a game needs to be. Are we seeing something similar? Are we going to see something similar that, in video games, that maybe we're seeing a little bit of in journalism, where you're seeing all of a sudden people breaking off from big places, whether by desire or because they have to go start a newsletter or start their own thing?
So with gaming, it's a little tricky because, like, at the end of the day, you need funding. It's a little hard to just be completely solo, do your own thing. It's not to say that, you know, there aren't studios doing it and just doing the venture capital thing of like, hey, we need the money. But like, that's even becoming tougher in 2024, you know, as games sort of have like this weird downturn where people are being laid off. But I think that there's a reckoning with what publishers want to put out because it makes the most sense financially, and what players are actually just asking for. You know, I unfortunately, like, after, for example, Harry Potter, the Harry Potter game that came out last year was like the best-selling game of the year. It was huge numbers, single-player game. And for some reason, its publisher, WB Games, is like doubling down on wanting to do live service stuff. And it's sort of like, how do you see the success of a single-player game? Yes, it was very expensive to make, but it surely made its money back because it's one of the biggest IPs in the world.
Right.
How do you double down on trying to create games like Suicide Squad, which, by all means, it doesn't seem like the game's going to bounce back from its pretty dismal launch. You know, it's because of the money. They think that they can be the next Destiny. You can be the next Fortnite. And it's a matter of realizing that, like, you just, even me as a player, or you, Dex, like, you're not going to be logging in every single day to play five different games like Destiny. It's impossible. I have a life. Yeah. I want to play a game that I can sit down, I can play, I can beat. I can say, like, hey, that was a great experience. I got my $70, $60 worth, whatever it is.
Right.
It's a matter of the industry. Well, not the industry, but just key publishers sort of realizing, like, hey, that's not sustainable. Because if that game gets put out, it's a live service game, and the player base isn't there, the financial sort of like stream that you were leaning on or expecting, it's just not going to be there. And now you got to shut down a game and you threw millions of dollars down the toilet for no reason.
and shutting down a game, which is a wild thing to say, but shutting down a game, it has so many other knock-on effects, especially if it's a competitive game. Because, if you get that, that's the wild thing about video games now, is especially esports, not to bring a whole other conversation in, but if you become really good, if you invest time into becoming really good at a game, and then that game ceases to run the servers, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, imagine you're really good. Imagine you grew up watching Kobe, and then you get really good at basketball. And then in 2030, just America is just, we're not really into this whole bouncing orange stuff on the ground thing. Let's do cricket. What do you do?
What do you do? Exactly.
It's over.
It's one of those things that you sort of, it sucks to see. Like, I hate to sort of beat up on Suicide Squad, but it's the most recent example of this. It's a game that, like, from the moment it was revealed, it was like, okay, you're doing a Suicide Squad game. Not only at the time where, like, the superhero thing is kind of on its downtrend, you're also doing a live service game with, like, characters like King Shark and Harley Quinn and Deadshot. It's like, in a superhero game, I don't want to, like, shoot AKs at, like, aliens. Like, that's just not really my thing. And then they go forth with it and it comes out and, like, yeah, like, what everyone sort of was saying at the time, that's exactly what happened when it released. Everyone was like, yeah, it's fine. Like, it works. But do I really want to, like, log in every day, do my dailies, get my XP, and then log off? Like, that, I don't want to do that in this game. Dude. Like, it's a shame because, you know, mark my words here, but I'm pretty sure in a year like this, that team Rocksteady is going to feel it in the way of layoffs. And that shouldn't have happened. That team is so, so talented. If you played the Batman games, the Arkham games, you know that team is capable of something way bigger than this. And it's really tragic to sort of see, you know, industry trends sort of be the reason why, you know, it's impacting the people who make our games.
Yeah, man. Yo, Samir just mentioned something actually in chat, and I'm pulling this up because this is something I actually didn't know. The subreddit, the Jak and Daxter subreddit, is trying to make a game. So look at this. Right here, I'm seeing this at the top. 5 hours ago, somebody posted, Jak 4 fan game, voice acting open call.
Ooh. This is, I love this, but also, like, I hope Sony's not also looking at this, like, copy, our lawyers will be there soon.
This is a good way to talk about something else, actually, speaking of lawyers and video game companies. Yeah. The Jak and Daxter thing, I mean, anytime you see somebody making a fan game, you always, it's like you said, you know, man, best of luck, but also thoughts and prayers.
Yes.
I hope it's good enough to be fun to play, but not so good that you get hit with that cease and desist. Because, man, you saw what happened to Yuzu, right?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, let's go over to legit friends of the show, Aftermath.
Hey, shout out to them.
Yeah, Yuzu got, and look, we knew it. We knew it. So for those of y'all who are not aware, Yuzu is still, which we can get to in a second, but Yuzu is an emulator which allowed you to play Nintendo Switch games. And Nintendo brought a case against them, and they got them. Yuzu has to pay Nintendo $2.4 million, but also take it down. Also take the whole thing down.
Like, there's copy about, like, why it's happening, and it's so clearly written by Nintendo. It's so clearly, visual in front of your website.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, it's like, we understand that it was primarily designed to circumvent, and yeah, come on, man. Yeah, it's...
Piracy is bad.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
Here's their statement. We have come to the decision that we cannot... Let's see. Yes, here's a statement that Yuzu released. We've been deeply disappointed when users have used our software to leak game content prior to its release and ruin the experience for legitimate purchasers and fans. Okay, this is maybe a good time to go back to... Here's a piece I did some time ago. And I actually had Dina voice it. This was actually really fun. So this is for Reset. So I'm just going to play back this little bit here from a piece on preserving game history. So this is, when is this? This is a while ago. This is 2021. So this is 3 years ago at this point, something like that. Anyway, here we go. Leads me to the third option, emulation. There are legally questionable ways to play pretty much any game that's ever been released. I've had a few long conversations with our lawyers, and they've allowed me to put together a little presentation on emulators. Here you go.
Game programmers have figured out a way to play the old arcade games like Pac-Man, Asteroids, and a slew of others on the PC. And the best part is, you don't need any quarters to play.
An emulator is a program that makes one piece of hardware act like or emulate another piece of hardware. So, for example, it can make your home computer act just like a PlayStation 2 or a Sega Dreamcast or a Nintendo 64 or pretty much any game system. Most emulators are available online for free. They generally don't contain any actual code from Nintendo or Sony or anything like that, so they're completely legal.
Pause right there saying that two things. Most are free, and they don't contain any code from the actual company, so they're completely legal. So let's keep going. Just pin in that.
At least none of the big companies have been able to prove that they're illegal. But what good is a console without any games? And this is where it gets dicey. The ROMs. A ROM is a game file ripped from the original cartridge or disc that the game shipped on. So when you load a ROM file into your emulator program, the file thinks it's running on a real Nintendo, or PS2, or whatever. 2 seconds later, you're playing OG Atari 2600.
Yeah, okay, so we get the idea there. So some key things there being that, there's no code from the company running in the program, that's fine. Also that it's free. Yuzu was free, kind of. So
there's a Patreon aspect to it, right?
Yes. Yuzu was... So a few things. First, as is mentioned in the article here on Aftermath, Yuzu was emulating a current system. So a lot of the arguments for why emulators should be okay, which again, an emulator is just allows you to play a game, which... A lot of this, it's the only way to play some video games because the hardware no longer exists. This is another thing is Yuzu, the people who were running this emulator, they also ran another emulator called Citra, and that one allowed you to play 3DS games. 3DS is a dead system at this point, and so if you don't have that hardware, they're not making it anymore, and they're not making the games anymore. And so there are games that you could have heard that are amazing that you could just never play. It's just gone. I mean, imagine somebody telling you, yo, this movie's really amazing, and it's just, I'm sorry, it's on this format, it's on beta, it's only on Betamax, sorry, you can't watch it, buddy. Like, what are you supposed to do about that? So anyway.
That goes into, like, I have to go find the beta player, and then I have to find the copy. It's like, all right.
Yeah. And so, but Yuzu had a Patreon that apparently was pulling in $30,000 a month. And in order to get the most updated, the most feature-rich version of it, you had to pay. So it wasn't just free. So for reference, anybody who uses emulators in general, emulator is totally free. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the ways that they get away from a company like Nintendo, which is extremely litigious. I always tell people, like, if you want to understand the video game legal landscape, Nintendo is Disney.
Yes.
In the same things that come to mind in the family friendly, Disney likes to be family friendly. Nintendo likes to be family friendly. Also, Disney will be the first person to sue you into absolute bankruptcy at the drop of a hat. Nintendo will do the same thing.
They will. They're very protective. Yes. And rightfully so. Like, they are the Mickey Mouse. They are. The word Nintendo is synonymous with video games for a reason to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really interesting, though, because as I said in that clip, or as Dina said in that clip, actually, emulation, no company has ever really truly been able to prove that an emulator, which again is just a program that allows you to play some software that emulates it, it does the same thing as a game system, but it doesn't contain any of the code. No game company has ever been able to prove in court that an emulator is illegal. Maybe we could talk about, you know, maybe like Bleem or something like that, you know, back in the day with Sony, but they were selling something, right? Yeah. Nintendo could have set a precedent here. And I think that's what people are concerned about is, wait, they were able to get somebody, they were able to legally bend it a little bit so that, hey, yeah, this thing is illegal.
Yeah, it's a little like the player in me is just it's upsetting only because it's like Nintendo, as litigious as they are, as much as quick as they are to sort of like, hey, if you're getting people to play our games for free in one way or another, whether that was your purpose or not, we're coming after you. It's like, well, Nintendo, make these games playable for us then. Like, why is it that if you're going to shut down this 3DS like emulator, why can't I go into a store? Like, give me the option to pay. And I think that that's where most gamers are, is we just want the ability to play it. Yeah. And like, if you're giving us no other option, we will use this software and we will find other means to sort of obtain, you know, the game itself so we can play it. And it's unfortunate that in, you know, with players sort of doing that, we had to kind of lose, you know, Citra, and we had to lose Yuzu, but
right.
it all comes back to like Nintendo, you're not allowing us to play stuff. Like, even if you look at, you know, sort of generational changes of like the N64 to the GameCube, like if you weren't able to get an N64 before they discontinued that console, what option did you have? It wasn't forward compatible. You couldn't like plug it into your GameCube.
Right.
Just had to, you know, that's how I played Mario Kart. I won't lie. Like it was on my computer because I did not have an N64. And by 2004, like there was no other option really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's the interesting thing here is I'm going to read from this article here. Here's what it says. This is the very end of the article. There's a passage in the proposed final judgment, which a judge has yet to sign off on, but it reads, developing or distributing software, including Yuzu, that in its ordinary course functions only when cryptographic keys are integrated without authorization, violates the DMCA. Basically, here's what it's saying. They're trying to say that even though, so usually the only way you would be able to say that somebody's violating copyright laws is because they actually have copied your code, put it in their program, and are giving that out, whether they're selling it or freely giving it out. You can't do that. In the same way that this is the reason why you can't bootleg music, this is the reason why you can't just sample people's stuff without permission, is, hey, you took somebody else's actual code and you're including it in your program and you're giving that out to people. You can't sell it. You can't give it out. You're not allowed to do that.
Right.
What Nintendo's arguing is that the point of Yuzu was to allow people, the entire point of the program was to allow people to do something that is illegal, and thus it is illegal. That's what they're arguing. So if right. they can make that argument, and the argument stands here, that's the concern, I think, is that if Nintendo is able to say that about this, then perhaps Nintendo could say about a Super Nintendo emulator, a Nintendo 64 emulator, programs that people use to be able to play games that simply are not, you can't buy them anymore.
Right.
They're not available on a download site, or they're not available on an official download service, you know, the Wii Shop or whatever, that's gone. The only way to play these is, frankly, via some kind of bootlegging, or you might even have the game. I mean, look, I have some ROMs that I play on a, you know, portable little emulator machine. I have the original game. I actually do own some of them. Like Mario 64, I have purchased Mario 64. I also have a ROM of Mario 64 because I'd like to be able to play that without plugging in my Nintendo 64, or maybe my Nintendo 64 broke. I still own the game. I bought it when it dropped. So,
and that's sort of the argument is like, if I paid the money to buy this piece of software, this should be mine to do whatever I want with it.
Forever.
And that sort of the area is like, well, a lot of people also did not have a copy of, you know, Tears of the Kingdom. They were playing it before launch. It's like, they are completely within their right because that gets into like DRM, that gets into like other parts of like the argument. But in the case of like, we're just shutting down this entire project, even for the folks who are like, hey, I bought Tears of the Kingdom. I want to play it on my Steam Deck because it'll just run better. Like the Switch is, it's an older console now. We want a better way to play some of these games. I paid my money, Nintendo. What's up?
That's a wild thing is that you can actually, emulators would allow you to run a current game better than it runs on the Switch.
Right.
Which, hey, that's a pretty legitimate reason to want to run the emulator. But now all that being said, go ahead.
No, just as long as you buy a copy, that is.
Sure. Like,
but yeah, it's...
Which,
it speaks to it. Like, I that's sort of where I'm at with Nintendo these days. It's like, we're waiting for a Switch 2, and, you know, that'll come out when it comes out. But it's like,
yeah,
you know, I can't blame someone who's just like, hey, I want to play this in, like, the best fidelity that I can. Mm-hmm. I paid my money. Like, let me do what I want to do.
This is where... And this is where Yuzu is an interesting topic, right? Because look, I was just yesterday, I actually talked to a developer who is making a fan game, a Pokemon fan game. A pretty, those who know it, know it. There's a Discord full of people playing the game. And this developer was telling me that they would never charge for it. Not only because they don't want to get sued, I think they don't, but their stance was they don't feel like it's ethically right to make money off of somebody else's IP. And so their stance was they don't think it's right to make money off of an emulator either, which I could see the other side of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I could see the other side of that. And I think it might've been different. It might've been different if it was a totally free thing, and hey, you can toss us some money if you like, but we're not paywalling anything.
Right.
That might have worked in their favor. I think where they started flying a little too close to the sun was with saying, hey, you can have this emulator, but if you want the real good one, the most up-to-date one, you got to pay for the Patreon. I think that's, unfortunately, I think that's where the Nintendo lawyers saw, okay, we could get in here. And that might have given now Nintendo a foothold in their eternal war that they're waging against emulators in general.
Right. The waves from this, our waves, it's going to be really interesting to watch because, like, yeah, the emulators they're not new, you know, they've just sort of been very hush hush and just sort of a lot of game companies just turn the other way and just like, whatever, not Nintendo. You kind of hope that it would continue this way, but like this sort of sets a very scary precedent, you know, like of getting back to games preservation. Like, games will just not be playable straight up. Like, you can't even find the fun workaround that you will, like, no, you just, some really great games will not be accessible for your folk. And that's awful.
Yeah. But that being said, so Nintendo, as part of this, you know, part of this decision, they have the source code to it. Yuzu has handed over the source code. But everybody has a source code. You can still get Yuzu. You just have to get it from another site. Boom. Here is Sue You on GitHub.
They could have tried a little harder.
Yeah. And then to present, look, to Nintendo legal team, you cannot defeat us. Even if you take me down, more would come. If you take them down as well, more still would come. You have lost this battle. You're going to get a bunch of like internet warriors who are motivated by Lord knows what. Bless them on their journey, by the way. Do your thing. But this is what's going to happen, and this is always what's going to happen. Nintendo is not stupid. They know this is going to happen. But I think if you start making money with their IP at all, that's when they're going to see an opportunity. This is not surprising. You know, this is just like, look, to use the Disney analogy, if you're, you know, drawing Disney characters, you're drawing a bunch of Mickey Mouse figurines and you're putting up on your website and say, hey, I really love drawing Mickey Mouse, and you get real big and viral from it, you're probably okay. Once you start selling it, that's when you're going to get a phone call and, you know, the SWAT team, and because it's Disney. And
fandom to like, all right, you're a hardened criminal in the eyes of the corporate world.
Yeah, man. But anyway, dude, thank you so much for spending so long on here just talking us through. There's a lot going on with video games, man.
A lot. We didn't even touch on like mad other thing. Yeah, it's like every day. There's a reason why a lot of publications are like taking it seriously. If you look at the Wall Street Journal, New York Times is like really amping up their coverage of games. It's its own little world, and it's really cool to cover. It's really cool to read into. I've been a nerd for this stuff since I was a kid. It's so interesting to me.
Thank you so much for coming through. Everybody, please thank Trump for coming through and follow. And yeah, what's the next piece you're working on, man?
I won't say much, but I am in the middle of like pitching a few stories that are a little bit close to the topic of the layoffs. I will say that much. I won't say specifically what. But I kind of wanted to stray off into that because it's such a big story and there's so many different angles to attack it from. I got to jump in and get my two cents in there.
Yeah, man. Well, anytime you want to talk about that, when they drop, feel free. I'd love to hear more about it and bring it to more people. Yeah, man. Definitely. Appreciate you.
Thank you. And appreciate you having me on, man.
Definitely, man. Anytime. We'll do it again. Peace. Whoo, man. Man, video game industry is kind of a mess right now for a lot of reasons, but we're going to focus on three today. Man, video game industry is kind of a mess right now for a lot of reasons, but we're going to focus on three today.